This is the first day of this July 2010 seven-day sesshin. And in this sesshin, we'll begin by reading from the teachings of the 12th century Chinese Zen master Fo Yan, who his other name that I think some more people will be familiar with is Wu Men or Mumon. This is the guy who compiled the Mumon Khan. So, and we'll be reading from a book called Instant Zen, Waking Up in the Present, translated by Thomas Cleary. So for biographical information on this Fo Yan or Wu Men, we'll go to our favorite source, Zen's Chinese Heritage, by Andy Ferguson. Wu Men's dates are 1183 to 1260, which means he was a contemporary of Japanese Zen master Dogen. It says here he came from Hangzhou, which is the site of the West Lake and numerous famous Zen temples. The records indicate that he started his Zen practice with the master Yue Lin Shi Guan. I'll just dispense with those names. He started out in the Linchi tradition, that is the Rinzai, in Japanese, the Rinzai tradition. And he was given the koan Mu, or in Chinese it's Wu. He worked on this koan for 6 years without progress. I would never use that phrase, without progress. If he's working on it for 6 years, there is definitely progress, but not enough that he could break through the koan. Finally, he vowed not to sleep until he penetrated the heart of this Zen gate. And finally, once when he was standing in the Dharma hall, he heard the bell sound for the midday meal and suddenly realized profound enlightenment. So he wrote a verse, part of which was the following: a clear sky and shining sun, a great thunderclap. Instantly all beings' eyes are opened and the myriad things come together. Clear sky and shining sun, everything revealed. And in this clear sky, a great thunderclap. All beings' eyes are opened. When one person comes to awakening, we could say in a certain sense, all beings' enlightenment is revealed at that moment. All beings' inherent enlightenment is realized, and the myriad things come together. This really means we see that all things have always been together. All things have always been indivisible. The next day, Wu Men went to the master's room to have his insight confirmed. The master said, "Where did you see these gods and devils?" He's testing them. "Where did you come up with all this blarney?" Wu Men shouted. The master also shouted. Wu Men shouted again. And in this exchange, Wu Men's enlightenment was confirmed. It mentions here that he's best known, Wu Men is best known for compiling and annotating the Gateless Gate, the Mumonkan. In the year 1246, so he was 63, that's when he was 63, he was appointed by the emperor to establish a certain temple. Later, during a drought, the emperor called on Wu Men to perform ceremonies to bring rain. Instead, Wu Men sat in continuous silent meditation. When an envoy from the emperor asked Wu Men what he was doing to bring rain, he replied, "Silently, not influencing anything." Immediately after this exchange, the rains came and spread throughout the country. As a result, the emperor bestowed on Wu Men the honorific name Foyan, Buddha Eye. So that's why we have both names. This is a revealing incident that reveals what is distinctive about the Zen school, that is, Zen in its purest sense. He's asked during this drought, he's asked by the emperor to perform ceremonies to bring rain. Now, a lot of teachers, monks, would do so, especially if asked by the emperor to do so. But Wu Men just sat in zazen. We can say that what distinguishes the Zen school is that we're not trying to do anything in our sitting, actually. And this is what differentiates it from other kinds of meditation, even Buddhist meditation. In metta meditation, loving kindness meditation, the sitter is trying to radiate loving kindness. That's doing something. We know that there are rituals and ceremonies for helping others, famine relief ceremony. There are memorial ceremonies, funeral ceremonies that are intended to help in the case of the funeral and the memorial service, to help the deceased through this intermediate realm between death and rebirth. There are other Buddhist practices of that are more like prayer, petitioning Buddhas and Bodhisattvas for this or that. And some of these things are not entirely absent from traditional Zen practice, but in its purest sense, in its purest form, Zen is beyond doing anything, beyond changing anything. And it is by not striving to change anything that we allow change to unfold. That's the premise. That's the basis of Zen practice. Just getting out of the way. Getting out of the way, and in doing so, enabling the natural course of change to take place. And so, we're told immediately after Wu Men explained that he was silently not influencing anything, the rains came and spread throughout the country. Well, that's all the information we have on Wu Men, Foyan. And now to our text, Instant Zen. I'm going to pick up in the middle of the book. A couple years ago, we did the first half, and now we'll pick up where we left off before. There's no particular order to these teachings that are presented here. He begins. Association with good companions is a serious recommendation of the ancient sages. Students today should follow the words of the Buddhas and patriarchs by finding a teacher to attain discernment. Otherwise, how can you call yourselves students? Well, you can take this literally, that without a teacher, there is no student. The two are mutually conditioning. But his point, his larger point, is that you need someone. Ultimately, you need someone with experience who is not part of your own systems, your own mental systems. Someone who can guide you objectively, because to sit on your own, that is certainly better than nothing, and one can go quite far sitting on one's own, but eventually, to really see clearly into the mind, it helps to have a guide who is trained and who has been through all of the trials, all of the challenges of practice, himself or herself with a teacher. So, association with good companions, he seems to be referring in particular to working with a teacher, but it could also mean what in Buddhism is called having spiritual friends, those who are walking this path with us. I think this is especially helpful in a wildly worldly culture such as ours, where we are bombarded with messages, both coarse and subtle. We are bombarded with messages that are, that work against us, work against Zen practice. And it really does help to associate with others who are struggling with the same temptations, the same distractions. It's fortifying. And so Zen is something that has always been practiced primarily in communities. It's very difficult to maintain a strong practice when you're isolated. The best thing is to be able to do both. To have others to sit with, and also not to be overly dependent on sitting with others, but to be able, when necessary, to sit on your own. I think this comes up most obviously when we travel. I hear from many people who talk of how hard it is when you're on the road, when you're in hotels or visiting relatives or friends, to sit. we need to reach the point where to not sit makes us feel yucky. That's a real turning point, because then it's not something we feel we have to do. We're not any longer forcing ourselves to sit. We sit because we don't feel right when we don't sit. To this day, after all these years of practice, I still feel not myself. I feel ill at ease if I don't sit first thing in the morning. There's some subtle, it's like dust. That's an old Zen analogy, dust on the mind. Everything's going to have a greater luster to it when we sit every day. Wu Men continues, if you want to clarify this matter, you must arouse wonder and look into it. If you wonder deeply about this matter, transcendental knowledge will become manifest. Why? The task of the journey just requires the sense of doubt to cease. But if you do not actively wonder, how can the sense of doubt cease? Well, it's a little unclear here whether it means doubt in the usual Zen sense of just questioning. But when he says, just requires the sense of doubt to cease. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Awakening resolves the doubt, or at least some of the doubt that fueled our practice up to then. But he's putting his finger on what has always been emphasized in Zen practice, at least in the koan practice, is the importance of questioning. Or I like this word, wondering. Questioning can sound like you're cross-examining yourself, you're interrogating yourself or someone else, but wondering implies this contemplative, this inner questioning. And then he talks about his own teacher, who we mentioned there in the little biographical piece that we just read. He says, my teacher was 35 years old before he became a monk. That's quite late, relatively speaking, especially for 12th century China. He was 35 years old before he became a monk. He stayed in the city of Chengdu to listen to lectures on the 100 phenomena as only representation. That's the title of the text. There he heard a saying of how when a Buddhist enters the path of insight, knowledge and principle merge, environment and mind join, and there is no distinction between that which realizes and that which is realized. A Hindu challenged the Buddhists. If there is no distinction between what realizes and what is realized, what is used as proof? No one could answer this challenge, so the Buddhists were declared the losers in debate. Later, the Buddhist canonical master of Tang came to the rescue of the Dharma. And this is what he said. When knowledge and principle merge, environment and mind unite, it is like when drinking water, one spontaneously knows whether it is cool or warm. This is a very famous metaphor in Zen practice. It's like one who knows himself, whether it is cool or warm. This points to the essence of the Zen sect, which is direct experience. Not memorizing, not reading, not quoting, but direct experience. Not the concept of the thing, but the direct experience of it. So now still, he's still relating what his teacher went through. He says, my teacher thought, it may be cool or warm, all right, but what is this business of spontaneously knowing? He wondered and questioned very deeply. He asked the lecturer about the principle of spontaneous knowing, but the lecturer couldn't answer. Instead, he said, if you want to clarify this principle, I cannot explain it, but in the South, there are those who have found out the source of the enlightened mind. They know about this matter. You will have to journey for it. Sometimes we read stories of the masters latching on to a phrase or a story that provokes deep questioning in them, that is hard to understand. This may be such a case of that. This is Wu Men's teacher saying, okay, what is this business of spontaneous knowing? It's a very personal thing, what grabs us and provokes deep questioning in us. The great Japanese Zen master Basui, when he was a young man, heard a lecturer refer to bright virtue. And this plunged him into his own deep wondering, and that he carried this for months, if not years. What is bright virtue? What is spontaneous knowing? This is the best case possibility of having a question bite into us that won't let us go. And so Wu Men's teacher set off on his travels. He went to the capital of the country and all around the eastern riverlands, asking every Zen practitioner he could find about this matter. And everyone gave him a reply. Some explained, some spoke in aphorisms. But in any case, his feeling of doubt or wondering remained unbroken. Later, he saw that everything Fu Shan said in lectures and interviews was relevant to what was in his mind, and he stayed for a year. Fu Shan had him take up the phrase, Buddha had a secret saying, Kashyapa didn't conceal it. This refers to the famous incident where the Buddha, once before the congregation of monks, instead of giving a lecture, he just held up a flower, and Kashyapa alone smiled in understanding. And this is, in the Zen school, is considered the first transmission of the Dharma, and Kashyapa then became the first of the ancestors in the ancestral line. Buddha had a secret saying, Kashyapa didn't conceal it. One day, Fushan said to Wu Men's teacher, why didn't you come earlier? You should go call on Bai Yun, another teacher. So my teacher went to Bai Yun. One day, he went into the teaching hall, and all of a sudden, he realized great enlightenment. Buddha has a secret saying, Kashyapa didn't conceal it. Of course. Of course. When knowledge and principle merge, environment and mind unite, it is like when one drinks water, one spontaneously knows whether it's warm or cool. How true these words are. And then Bai Yun, Wu Men's teacher's teacher at the time, he nodded in confirmation. And then Wu Men himself here says, isn't this a case of doubting and wondering profoundly, approaching people who know, and only then succeeding in clarification? What about the travels of my late teacher calling on teachers? Why did he later say he questioned an aged grandfather? What about selling and buying oneself? What is that? You should realize there is no excess. What the man of old said is all you. I skipped the verse, but here, since he's alluding to it, I'll read the verse that Wu Men's teacher composed after his enlightenment. At an idle patch of field before the mountain, politely I question an aged grandfather. How many times have I sold and bought myself? Charmingly, the pine and bamboo draw a clear breeze. There's a verse in the Mumonkan, compiled by Wu Men, of course. And there's a line in which Wu Men says, himself questions and himself, no, himself sells and himself buys. So perhaps he got it from this verse of his teacher. And then finally, Wu Men once again quotes his teacher. I have never had a single statement to reach you. If I had a statement to reach you, what use would it be? Do you want your feeling of doubt broken? You too must be like my late teacher once before you can accomplish it. You must be like my late teacher once before you can accomplish it. So there's really no answer as such. There's no answer that any of us can give anyone else that will satisfy a fundamental understanding in Zen practice. Each one of us must reach a resolution to our questioning, our problem, ourself. It's the only way. If an answer, per se, if an answer would satisfy, well, then any teacher would just dish out the answers. Instead, it's the job of a Zen teacher to clarify the questions, to help the student focus the questioning. Student doesn't need the answer from the master. Student has everything she needs, everything he needs within. And then in another teaching, Wu Man said, consider the case of the great master Ma. Ma refers to Ma Zu. Japanese, it's Basso. What I remember about reading about Ma Zu is that he is supposed to have had 139 disciples come to enlightenment under him. He preceded these famous masters we always read from, Umon, Joshu, Rinzai. So he saw a monk going downstairs, and this master Ma called out to him, O worthy! When the monk turned his head, the master said, from birth to death, it's just this person. Why turn your head and revolve your brains? And at that, the monk understood the essential point of these words. And then Wu Men asks us, what is the logic of this? From birth to death, it's just this person. Tell me, what person is it? As soon as you arouse the intention to see this person, then you do not see this person. From birth to death, it's just this person. In the Mumonkan, Wu Men says, Shaka and Miroku are servants of another. Who is this other? Shaka is just a kind of a nickname for Shakyamuni Buddha. Miroku is the Japanized name for Maitreya, the Buddha of the next world cycle. So in this case, Wu Men is saying both the present Buddha and the future Buddha are, believe it or not, they are servants of another. Servants. These great, fully enlightened ones. They're servants of another. Who is this other? Wu Men continues, this person is hard to see, very, very hard. People today simply say, this is this person. Who else is there? There couldn't be any other. 99 out of 100 understand in this way. What grasp do they have? If you interpret in this way, how can you understand the matter of from birth to death? And how can you immediately see it as just this person? Every once in a while, someone in Sesshin will come to Doksan and in kind of a buoyant state and announce, Mu is Mu. Mu is Mu. And they feel that they've had some great insight. Well, it's just like this. This is this person. Who else is there? There couldn't be any other. Done. And then Wu Men says, if you do not see this person, you have no idea how your mortal being will end up. For people working on Mu, this person is Mu. People questioning, who am I? Well, that's it. Who is this one? Same with what is this? And what the question, what is this? The this, of course, is this person, who is such so much more than a person. Wumen continues, what about this lecturing and listening right now? Is there actually lecturing and listening, or is there no lecturing and listening? If you say you are standing there while I am sitting here, I am lecturing and you are listening, any villager can say such things. How can you call yourselves Zen practitioners? If you say there is no lecturing and no listening, still, he made the statement, from birth to death, it's just this person. See what Wu Men is doing here. He's putting us in a box where the conventional understanding is not adequate. You know, well, I'm here and you're there. I'm so-and-so and you're so-and-so. That's just ordinary understanding. Anyone can say that. But he says also you can't just take the side of negation and say there is no one giving teisho and no one listening. Because that also is just half the truth. So beyond affirmation and negation, who is this person? What is Mu? Before I had understood, I was totally helpless, so I asked of my teacher. As soon as I'd ask a question, my teacher would just say, I don't understand. I don't know. I'm not as good as you. I also asked if Zen is ultimately easy to learn or hard to learn. He just told me, you're all right. Why are you asking about difficulty and ease? Learning Zen is called a gold and dung phenomenon. Before you understand it, it's like gold. When understood, it's like dung. I didn't accept this at the time, but now that I've thought it over, although the words are coarse, the message in them is not shallow. So this statement flies in the face of what most people, beginners certainly, would expect. At first, it's just ordinary, and then later, there is this marvelous thing. But that's not Zen, the Zen experience. More often, in the beginning, we romanticize this teaching, this reality, however we think of it. We make it into something extraordinary. But after awakening, we come to see that it is the most ordinary of things. So when Lin Chi was asked, what is the ultimate principle? He said, when hungry, I eat. When tired, I sleep. Another master said, rain falls and the earth gets wet. Let's stop here now and recite the four vows.